Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm George Chen.
And I'm Paco Romaine, and you're listening to SubDoc.
This is our show where we talk to people from the world of comedy, music, TV, and film about documentaries.
And this week, we're talking to actor and comedian Ahmed Barucha about Detropia. Ahmed has been on Conan and has a half-hour Comedy Central special.
Detropia is Heidi Ewing and Rachel Grady's 2012 documentary detailing Detroit's declining economy and social collapse.
You can find Ahmed on Dream Corp LLC on Adult Swim and his stand-up album, Almond Badoody.
Ahmed Barucha.
Hello.
Do you go Barucha or Barucha?
Cha.
You're a cha. Okay.
But
and
that's okay.
Randomly, I know the one other Barucha, which is your cousin.
Oh, I know.
That's so
I
random.
Love that.
Yeah.
Wait,
I always thought he was a Barucha, though.
You know Ahmed's
maybe
cousin?
He says Barucha.
Yeah, I know your cousin through music stuff. It's very random.
Yeah.
He's like, you mentioned Rhode Island, and I was like, I know one other Barucha from Rhode Island. There's no way you guys really do. That's my cousin.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, he's awesome. And they lived in Japan when they were younger, so we met him when we were really young, and then I didn't see him for a long time, and we've recently reconnected. And they don't have a lot of their dad died on our side. So I don't think that they like had a lot of contact because, you know, when your dad's gone, like you kind of just don't see that side of the family as much, especially if you're in Japan. So yeah.
Especially if you're in Japan.
So I think they're kind of like, they were excited. Like they're like, oh my God, we have like cousins who also like art. This is all, this is crazy.
Yeah. I heard some interview that he did on some other podcast where I didn't realize he was like an Instagram star.
Yeah. He's like, great photographer.
Sean is like I knew he's a good photographer, but like he has like a huge like Instagram following.
Yeah. I love his Instagram.
Yeah.
His wife has a great Instagram too.
What's his photos of?
Like a lot of New York, a lot of,
landscape kind
of. Yeah. Cool. Like pictures of like the protests. I think he took a bunch of cool protest pictures that got on like a magazine or something.
Right.
Like that.
Yeah. To be fair, taking photos of New York City, you generally get good anything.
Yeah. That's like, I went to like New Orleans and I was like, this whole city is just Instagram.
Yeah.
Like it's already Instagrammed.
Yeah.
It like looks old and damaged. And
Yeah. It's like if you go to Cuba or something, it's all going to look cool, you know?
And you were saying before we got a mic that you just went to Saudi Arabia. Did you tour all over the Middle East?
All over the Middle East. I went for the few U.S. embassies in Saudi Arabia. It was kind of like a culture exchange. And that was really interesting. You know, I didn't know what to expect. I'd been to the Middle East once before in Bahrain, but Bahrain, you can drink and it's kind of a little bit more laid back. They still have a king and things aren't great. But Saudi Arabia is like, you hear about Saudi Arabia and it's like, whew, that is intense there. Like I when I signed the visa on it, it said, I understand that if I bring in drugs or alcohol, I may be punished by death.
Jesus.
That's like the application
like
to enter the city. Yeah, you're like, wow. So, like, I bought a new backpack.
Yeah, you're like,
I don't want traces.
Nothing. Yeah.
New backpack. Like.
Of course, the backpack was sponsored by Kettle One Vodka.
Yeah,
God,
made of hemp.
But when I got there, I didn't ever really feel that unsafe. But I also was in the embassies a lot and traveling with people. It was like an armored car, which was kind of cool. But, you know, we went into the city a bunch, and you see a lot of really nice people, and it was kind of a nice... I don't know. I like going to places that scare me a little bit, because when you go there, you realize that your fear is, like, a little over the top.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like America, we're always a little bit more afraid than we should of everything else.
Yeah.
We're so safe.
Yeah. Were there other comics on the tour with you?
Actually, the only other person was my old improv teacher. He's who connected me with it. He was going to do like improv workshops, which was actually the only way I would like to go and do these things. Because with stand-up, you're just telling jokes to the audience. With the improv workshops, it was like you were bringing in locals and teaching them stuff and seeing their humor. Mm-hmm. And women don't perform there. So in awesome. The embassies, we were bringing up women on stage, and that was the most exciting part of it.
Right.
They were, like, killing. There was one girl that was, like, so funny right away, and she'd never done improv. And I was impressed because, you know, I've taken improv classes and everything, and her first line was, like, adding information. You know,
right. She hadn't even been taught that yet. Yeah.
She was just like, she pointed out, she's like, oh, you're not wearing any shoes. And it like made sense to the thing. And I was mm-hmm. like, oh, that was great. Mm-hmm. So that was cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
See, it just goes to show you don't need any training to be good at improv.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, you just say things.
you're just a good conversationalist. Yeah,
that's what we proved.
You were just doing improv. You and the teacher were doing improv.
Well, he was doing improv and then I would do stand-up. You would do stand-up. Cool. I think he contacted or Saudi Arabia, and they were interested in it, but they, you know, they don't know improv there as well. So they wanted an element of stand-up because they're like, oh, our audience, like, we know of stand-up. Mm-hmm. So if you can bring a stand-up, that'd kind of pique people's interest, and then they come in, and then they learn about the improv.
And everyone speaks English in Saudi Arabia?
Mostly, yeah. We actually got to perform. There's one comedy club in Saudi Arabia, which is crazy because they don't even have movie theaters.
For expats, or it's for
locals. Yeah. It's actually run by these local comics that are really amazing. They, like, have their own office. Mm-hmm. It was super cool. They really, like, work really hard at it, and their audiences were, like, packed. But it makes sense because there's no movie theater. So, like, right. The idea that there's a place you can all go and there people are going to be funny. And the men and women have to sit on different sides, right. And there's, like, a thing. But, yeah, that was cool because all the other comics were speaking Arabic the whole show. And then even the host introduces you in Arabic, and then you just come out and you're like, I hope that they...
Yeah. I hope it's me. He cool? just yeah.
Like, I just had... And I, like, learned one thing in Arabic just to, like, get them to go, like, realize that I don't speak it.
Yeah. Have you ever done international stand-up anywhere?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, Mexico. That's international, right?
Yeah.
Mexico.
You'd say so.
And
I know one person who would
who thinks that.
Sure. And Akron, Ohio. That's
Akron, Ohio. Another one.
That was
two opposite expectations.
Oddly, also very similar.
Yeah, that's true.
I did like kind of, it was like kind of like a open mic that I had to get in touch with the guy ahead of time, but it was in Shanghai. Last year.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a whole interesting scene. Yeah, the guy who hosted is Australian, who's married to like a German lady, but they live in Shanghai.
Right.
There's a guy that's just straight up a Midwestern, like a comic that you would see. He's very Norm MacDonald-y. Like his accent, his whole vibe was very Norm MacDonald-y. Yeah. He's like maybe like around our age, but and he's just like married to someone in China, and he's just like, yeah, I just do stand up in China now. But, wow. Did a whole long thing about football. I did my shitty Red Hot Chili Peppers jokes, and they just went over like. As you would expect, they
like a fart in church.
Yeah, as you might expect. Yeah. So I did not have the best set, but Paulo Gatta. Do you know him?
No.
Yeah, he's a comic, American comic, but he was headlining out there. So
my buddy runs a comedy tour from Berlin to Amsterdam and back.
That's cool.
Every like 6 weeks, and I've always wanted to do it. He's offered me, you know, and then like. It's the same, like, six comics. Not the same each, but it changes each tour. But you start in Berlin, and it goes through, like, Prague, and then into Italy and Spain, and then Amsterdam, and then back. And that would be so much fun. I've never taken them up on that.
I would love to do that.
Yeah.
You should do it, man.
I know, I should. I'm just lazy.
Just bring one of these
and
do some interviews.
That's the one thing to not be lazy about.
Like, yeah, that is the one.
Comedy in a cool
trip. Well, I have to say, to my defense, I asked him once to do it, and he was like, dude, do it. Fly into Munich. I'll pick you up. Like, it's going to be all good. And then I was like, okay. And then he, like, 2 days later, is like, I hope you didn't buy your tickets. My girlfriend's coming. I don't want anybody in my apartment for, like, the next month because I haven't seen her in a long time. And I was like, well, I'm glad I didn't spend the $5,000 on the plane ticket too.
Like just hanging out in Munich, like, hey, is this thing on?
Yeah. Is this thing on?
There's supposed to be a pretty good scene in Berlin though. I've heard that.
Yeah.
Really?
And in Prague too. And it's all expat bars.
Yeah.
And they're apparently he sent me pictures, like big fucking places, like 500 seater type.
Wow.
He does like theaters and stuff.
Yeah, because they're wanting some
Yeah.
home some
Yeah, some home stew.
Entertainment.
Exactly. Some crockpot comedy.
I was thinking about like doing stand-up like in Dubai or something. And I was thinking Dubai is a pretty good opposite of what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
Dubai is maybe like, what's the opposite of Detroit? Maybe Dubai.
Yeah. Maybe Dubai.
The best thing I could think of to get us into that.
It's hard to compare anything to Detroit.
Yeah.
Have you been?
Yes, I have. Kind of, you know, my wife's from Michigan, so I've been to Michigan a lot since I've met her. And the first time I went to Detroit, I was blown away because it was the first time I've been to a country in the U.S. that felt like you were going to a place where there was like ancient ruins.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There was like skyscrapers that like all the windows were knocked out.
Yeah.
Fucking I Am Legend.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are just empty neighborhoods.
Yeah. It's sad but beautiful to me. It's like,
yeah, there's some moody landscaping going on in Detroit.
It itself is also a great Instagram.
Yeah, it is, absolutely.
Yeah, the colors in the beginning. I noticed like a lot of good photography and like good color use in this thing.
So that's a good segue. So we are here to talk about Detropia.
Detropia.
And so tell us why this is something you wanted to talk about. Why'd you pick?
So I think for many reasons, my wife's from Michigan, and Detroit I find very interesting as just a study of a city. I also just think it seems like such a good example of an American city and kind of it's like a warning for America, you know?
Oh, that's interesting. I think like a beacon or
something. Yeah, it's like, this is what could happen like, if we don't pay attention to things.
Well, and I mean, to add something to that, it's happened. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Other cities have, I mean, New Orleans, Baltimore, mm-hmm. I mean, there's Cleveland.
I think it's almost it's kind of what America is designed by. It's like the break and bust. It's like, sometimes it just busts and goodbye, walk away.
And there is no one smart enough to fix a problem, an urban problem that like Detroit has.
Yeah.
There's no one that has the power or ability. Mm-hmm. So many people have fucking tried.
Yeah, and it's easy to say what you think the solution is, but
it's
so much harder to actually follow through with those.
Whoever could fix that should be president.
Yeah.
We would finally have someone who's actually should be.
That would be a great way to become president, is not an election, just like a task.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a game show.
Like, who wants to fix president? Detroit and you're president.
Yeah. Tonight on Who Wants to Be President? We're going to fix Detroit.
You see, like, Trump, like, with, like, a sword, like, in the gates of Detroit.
Yeah. Hillary Clinton's got, like, a flamethrower.
Yeah. I feel like he did.
Arnold Schwarzenegger's in there.
Yeah. Didn't he do, like, one of his campaign stops in Detroit to try and, like, a church and try and be like, the Democrats haven't helped you. That's basically was his entire thing to like black people. Like, try me.
Detroit was doing great before Obama.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, he's kind of has a point that everyone's abandoned Detroit.
Yeah.
Everyone's sucked whatever
that
morrow it has.
That's what I think. I kind of just think in general is what we do is we just suck. We're just like, all right, here's a great resource. Let's just suck it dry. Yeah. And then,
there's no better story of the plight of the middle class than fucking Detroit. I talk about broad shoulders, hardworking, lovely fucking people that have just been stepped on and abandoned.
And some of them still just love their city and their
horse.
That's what's kind of beautiful about it. It's like no matter how it's treated them badly, they're like, this is where my home is.
You'll never meet prouder people than Detroiters.
Yeah.
They fucking love that.
Yeah.
Even the ones that got out
still
longingly love Detroit.
Exactly.
Yeah. As we say, I have my Michigan sweater on.
He has Wings cup.
He's got his Red Wings cup, which I love.
Yeah.
Love the Wings.
I feel like I didn't grow up with any kind of regional actual pride because I grew up in San Jose.
Yeah.
Like, we got the Sharks.
Yeah.
They were new at the time.
Right.
This is fucking and hockey team in San Jose.
Pastel blue. It's that's not a hockey
team. Teal.
Color.
Yeah.
Did you not, like, have, like, kind
well,
of
I'm not a sports guy.
San Francisco. But even without the sports, like, it's
so
close, right?
Yeah. Living in San Jose, like, it was like, a lot of people, I feel like, a few people I know, like, stayed in San Jose for, like, the long run, but a lot of people, you just end up in San Francisco or Oakland.
Yeah.
And then as time went on, like, maybe Portland as the Bay Area got too expensive. But, yeah, I don't have that sense of, I kind of feel like I have California pride.
Yeah, me too.
But not actual, like,
San Jose
Pride. I don't feel like there's a lot to really.
Yeah, I was born in Santa Barbara, and it's.
Oh, were you?
It's like it's kind of lame to be proud of that.
Mike Mills just made it real cool.
Yeah,
he made 20th Century Women. Like, there was a punk scene in Santa Barbara.
Yeah,
is that where you grew up though, or you just?
Yeah, I grew up there until I was 16, and then I moved to Rhode Island.
Oh, God.
That's a shocking.
So that gave me a little bit more like cred, I think.
Yeah,
I went
to a jazz festival in Rhode Island.
Oh, really?
Long time in Narragansett Bay.
Yeah, beautiful.
The jazz JVC jazz festival. Anyways, we went to a bar and there was this beautiful blonde girl, and I was like, yeah, there's one. There's that one. You know her, Shelly.
We're all listening.
And I went up to her and I was like,
Long from
can I buy you a drink? And she looked at me and she's like, yeah, fucking A, you can buy me a fucking drink. Fucking step up, motherfucker.
Awesome, dude.
I was like, okay, never mind. Like, I never heard she talk like a longshoreman.
Yeah, I used to love that. I love like a beautiful woman with like a scary accent.
Yeah, she did. She really did. That was the weirdest trip of my life, man. We got chased by cops and all.
Oh, wow.
It was raining hard, and I went into a laundromat to put my wet clothes in the dryer, and this lady came out who owned it. And she's like, what do you think this is, like a truck stop? I was like, I'm doing my laundry. It's a laundromat. It was so weird. She was so mad that I took the clothes off my back to put into a dryer.
You were naked, though, right?
That's I was naked. Yeah, of course.
I'm in a laundromat. Leave me alone.
Leave me alone, lady.
Yeah.
Sir, you need to have brought at least one extra pair of pants.
Yeah. There was no shirt, no shoes, no service sign, so I felt like I was good. But.
Now, the city you grew up in, was it? I know Providence has had like sort of the industrial. Like, there's obviously like
I grew up in North Smithfield, which was kind of more like a not rural town. It was a small town, so I don't think it really had. It was next to a Woonsocket, which was a place that had a lot of like old mills that were abandoned, and it was kind of a rough, like kind of had a rough story as well.
Mm-hmm. Those are very New Englandly sounding names.
Yeah.
Woonsocket.
Woonsocket. Next to North, whatever.
North Smithfield.
Yeah, North Smithfield. Yeah.
Lincoln. I guess that's not just.
But yeah, I know Providence has had its share of criminal mayors.
Oh, Buddy Cianci.
Yeah.
He was not mayor when I moved there, but everyone still loved him. He like went to jail
for beating
him back.
Yeah, for beating his wife's lover with a Duraflame log. While that talk about Game of Thrones. Earlier. Yeah. That's a Game of Thrones.
That's what we call fight.
In Rhode Island, that's a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Is that where you started comedy?
I did. I started in Providence. I worked in a comedy club. I was a busboy, and I didn't realize. I don't think I really knew what a comedy club was. I thought it was a. Like, I looked on the sign, and it was like Stitches Comedy Cafe. And I wanted to be a comedian. So I was like, oh, I thought it was like a place where the waiters were funny.
Oh.
So I applied and I kept telling them like how much I liked comedy and how I was funny.
Yeah.
And like later I realized like I'm just being interviewed by like the head chef.
Right, right, right.
And
he's
like, oh, okay. And you wash dishes? And you're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's like, all right.
Yeah, you start tomorrow.
2 weeks in, I'm like, oh, this has nothing to do with comedy.
Right, wait. Actually, it has everything to do with comedy.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Most comedians, I've met a lot of comedians who've started through the staff.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Door guys, yeah.
Guys, cooks, all the whole thing.
Yeah, because it's scary. So if you feel like you're at least at home,
right?
You know, you're like, oh, these are my buddies.
Oh yeah, I never thought about that. Yeah, yeah, you're
home
comfortable.
Yeah,
that's interesting. So Stitches.
Stitches Comedy Cafe.
That's the first place you did a set?
Yeah, first place I did a set. And I worked there for a year before I did it. And then I asked them if I could sign up for the open mic. And they were like, yeah, it's an open mic. Yeah. Like,
you
wait,
should have done that before you washed a dish.
I didn't have to wash all those dishes.
That's funny.
But then they closed pretty soon after. And then I was in college then. So I started doing a couple shows at college, running my own show in a cafeteria that, you know, had blenders and people eating and not paying attention.
Right.
Were you booking a lot of Boston people to come?
Yeah, that's actually, I kind of towards the end of college, I discovered Boston, which I felt so stupid. I'd maybe done comedy for 3 years before realizing how great Boston was. Then I found that, you know, just from doing comedy with a random couple people from Boston, they're like, have you done Boston? You're like, I went up there once. It was fine.
Yeah.
And then I went up and I was like, oh, it's one of my favorite comedy cities ever. Like, just, I think, you know, it's a great city for comedy because there's a drunk assholes, and then there's like the college kids.
Right.
It's like a great like mix of just
preppies,
yeah.
And,
yeah,
yeah, artists.
Yeah,
we were just talking about
Wayne Fetterman.
Yeah, with Wayne Fetterman about like what made it such a great city to do comedy.
Well, and he was saying both like in the early '90s, both the Boston area and San Francisco had enough clubs that you could make a living just being a regional comic. And apparently there's a bunch of guys in Boston that never left because they could just make a living doing it.
That actually still holds true with Boston, I think, where people don't leave. It's like almost its own ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You just do all New England and you don't leave.
Have you seen the Boston comedy documentary?
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. When you start there, too, it's like, you got to watch it.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, this is where I am. I'm part of this.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Even though they're all gone.
There's a lot of clubs in Detroit.
Yeah.
There's like four, maybe five now in and around the greater Detroit area.
I would love to open up a club in Detroit. That would be like a...
If you got six grand, you could probably do it.
Yeah. It would be a low overhead. That's true.
Yeah.
You also have to have blues. That's a requirement.
I'll do it.
Have a blues band also.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
What would you call it?
I always wanted to call a comedy club like the Grumpy Goat or something. Because I wanted
alliteration.
I don't want like the club to look like Silly Billy's.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like I want it to just look like a cool bar.
You're right.
And then people realize there's comedy there.
Maybe. Yeah. The Grumpy Goat. I can just see the neon where the goat's kicking some guy in the balls. Welcome. That's awesome. That would be fun. Yeah. I mean, I've done a lot of stand up in Michigan and around Detroit and I tell you, the Midwest for audiences.
Good place for comedy.
Jesus Christ.
Any place where there's winter.
Yep.
Makes a really good audience.
Yeah, and not a lot of other entertainment choices.
Yeah. So
also helps
like,
a lot.
I'm cold. I'm got nothing else to do. Let's bundle in and make us laugh.
Yeah. And there's some like Dr. Grin's in Grand Rapids mm-hmm. and like that. That's a place.
Yeah, that's
where,
great.
Yeah. You just walk on stage and they start laughing.
Yeah.
They're so happy and they're into
that
it.
That might just be you though.
It could just be me, yeah.
Your fly was down.
Yeah, and
this
I also
is a great audience.
I throw money out to the audience when I walk up. It helps set them.
Is Grand Rapids near here? I mean, my geography. I've only been through Michigan like once, and I didn't. I guess I kind of drove near. I went to Pontiac, of all places, and then
all places.
I think we stayed in maybe closer to Detroit, but it was like the outlying regions.
Grand Rapids is like the northern. Like or not northern like
it's
middle
mid yeah mm-hmm. Let's let the jury show that I'm holding up my hand the map of Michigan. It's there. It's 2.5 hours from Detroit west due west.
I've heard a lot of great things about Lansing.
Yeah,
I haven't ever done comedy there, but everyone always says that. Well, a lot of good colleges there.
Yeah, there's tons. They used to have the Comedy Connections in Lansing,
okay.
But it's since closed. I think it closed like a year and a half ago. But there's still, I mean, all the college towns in and around the Great Lakes states, there's tons of comedy clubs.
I would think a comedy club would be one of the first things to go in Detroit. I didn't realize there was something. I mean, people do need to laugh, but like looking at the Blues Club.
About the documentary, the art, and I think a lot of times art is the like last thing to go because like, if you don't have that, then you're definitely done.
I want to show you something. All this is empty. They built a new plant in Mexico and took all the work to Mexico.
For factory support, which is the guys that are making $14.35, their new proposal is $11 an hour, which means they will lose $3.35 an hour on their wage.
Why? What do you think you're going to feel every day going into work?
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
one of the things that bothered me about this documentary.
It was like,
oh, the part of the saviors of Detroit will be the artist that
came. Yeah.
Like the white artist.
Oh, yeah, that was really weird. Yeah.
I was like, get the fuck out of here.
Immediately, like when you see them with the gas masks.
Yeah.
Give us,
they did stick out in that where they just didn't feel like they fit in the documentary.
Right.
It was a cool picture. Yeah. It made a good cover for
for
the Netflix cover. But
Describe it.
I feel like the filmmakers knew what they were getting to. So the filmmakers, Heidi Ewing and Rachel Grady, who also made Jesus Camp.
Yeah.
People that made Jesus Camp, which was great. And kind of did a similar thing. There's no like narration that's telling you exactly what's up, but then there's like a lot of subtitles that kind of like give you the info from their angle. Clearly. But yeah, so there's a couple and they're called the Hygienic Dress League. I looked this up later. I don't know if it was actually said what the name of the group was. And it's the most like subpar Shepherd Fairey shit.
Yeah.
Which is also a Providence guy or a RISD guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I hated them immediately.
And it was even like the clip was just someone watching them being mad about them.
Yeah. No, and I was like, I'm with her.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah, that's my
Describe that scene.
There's two. They're wearing suits.
Yeah,
she's in maybe a fur coat, and then they have like golden gas masks,
golden
gloves, and then like has a sign that says like "Give us your money."
Yeah, these clearly like Caucasian people in Detroit, like, and then like African American woman like in the passenger seat of a truck going by, and her face is exactly like, what the fuck?
Fuck you.
That's fair? Like, I feel like it's so weird. Yeah, exactly. Being from like Oakland, like this role of like, you know, we just talk about gentrification like all the time. And there's like clear, this is a very extreme example though. Those people would, if you did that in Oakland, you're not making it through the day.
No.
You're not going to get through the
day. That's what was weird too. I feel like all the other characters in the documentary were like people who'd lived through it.
Yeah.
People who like loved Detroit.
Yeah.
And then they were like, and these guys, they just moved here and they love it.
From fucking Hawaii.
Like the opera one, I thought was a better story of the.
Oh, I wanted to know more about
him. We're sticking around. Yeah. We're like still performing for people.
Yeah.
Yeah. However, I mean, yeah. And but yeah. The
sponsored by Ford.
Right. Yeah. The three big car companies are what 70% of their grant money is by the companies, of the auto companies. But like for real though, like these artist types, and one of the things he says is like, it doesn't matter if we fail because like we haven't put any, there's no money involved.
Yeah.
Like, so we have nothing to lose, basically. Yeah. He was saying by moving to Detroit and not being good artists. It's like, what the fuck? Yeah. Who thinks like that? The fuck is that all about?
Can't Jack White just buy up all of Detroit right now?
Probably has, actually.
Yeah. Well, actually, he's got the Third Man Records down there
now.
It's
in Nashville, I thought.
It's both.
There's one down there. I actually saw him there. My brother-in-law, basically, like, we went there, and he's like a huge drummer fan, Detroit, he gave me this Wings cup for Christmas. Like, he is the biggest Detroit fan. And then we went there, and then Jack White just walked out of the thing, and it was like the best day of his life.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Jack's, apparently they're a bunch because I have friends that go there all the time. And yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. When I think of like, they didn't get into like all, like, I know of Detroit, and like, we all know about Motown.
Yeah.
And then like, obviously things like, you know, the MC5 and like the huge garage rock scene that happens like in parallel, or like that let the White Stripes happen. There was all those people like,
yeah, I did think that the documentary was a little unfinished or something. It just kind of didn't just broach the topic.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Didn't have a lot of found footage. It was like, they shot it all kind of like just from they were there
like
for
like
a
liked
year,
those two guys that they followed. They were just really likable guys.
The auto workers guy. Yeah.
Yeah. George. The union leader. The other guy that had the restaurant. I liked that guy.
That guy was great. I feel like he really was.
Wait,
like,
the Tommy Stevens guy, the Raven Lounge.
Raven Lounge guy.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah. He was great. Those are my two favorite.
Of course,
guys. They were just like,
they were like philosopher kings.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I mean, Tommy Stevens. I'm like, I just want a documentary about him.
Exactly.
Like, could have. Yeah.
Yeah. Like when he goes up to the fucking dickhead at the auto show, the Detroit show.
Yeah.
Talks about the Chevy Volt.
Beautiful.
I love how he's just like, I know you're looking at this car here. Look at that car over there.
And it was funny because the guy took it in the complete wrong way.
He thought
he was insulting him, but he's like, I'm on your side.
Yeah.
I want you to win. I've seen this go wrong. what are you going to do about it? And he's like, yeah, it's different. People like
your apples to oranges. Like, fuck you and your apples to oranges bullshit. And he's saying, like, I own the Raven Lounge. It's in Hamtramck where the Chevy Volt plant is going to be. And he's like saying, like, listen, this car is $41,000. These bitches over here have this car, electric car, that's $20,000 and gets more mileage.
And you know why? Because there's no environmental regulations in China and the labor is incredibly cheap.
Right.
So you can just do
well. That
the
guy was
that
saying there was no frills too. That's that one
no
guy's
options.
Argument was. Oh well, there's no options.
But
it's
that
like, well, not everyone wants options. No.
Guess what? I mean, this came out in 2012. Guess now it's 2017. Guess what happened to the Chevy Volt? It's gone. It never worked.
Never
you know why? Because the sticker price and the fact that it only got like 20 miles to a charge or 30 miles to a charge. So like the guy was right.
It was
everything he said was right.
I haven't seen a lot of the build your dream cars around though either. I haven't seen those Chinese cars around.
But
Priuses. That's basically it. Yeah.
But like they put no real R&D into the Chevy Volt. They just basically were. I mean, who killed the electric car? We've all seen that.
Like, I actually have not.
Oh, you haven't seen
that? It seems like that's necessary.
Well, let me take that back. I'm the only one that's seen it.
Well, then a lot of our listeners probably haven't either. I mean,
it's such a great documentary. It's all about how the big three just squashed the electric car. And they show actually in LA, they basically recalled all the electric cars that they had made in the 90s. And they show this graveyard of these cars, of these electric cars. It's stunning. But I mean, they basically thumbed their nose at the electric car movement for years, and then all of a sudden they're like, like Tesla and is doing well,
and we hit peak oil as far as like but do you understand what happened with the bailouts of the auto industry? Because that was under Obama, right? That they bailed out the auto industry.
I mean, that's I think one of the reasons they're pretty mad over there is because they just bailed out the guys on top they just
Look at it, Ford did the best job with it. Ford was given $9 billion. Ford invested that money back into Ford and saved a bunch of jobs. And then they're like the one company that actually is doing something good.
Okay.
So Ford actually used the money the correct way and saved a bunch of jobs and didn't move a bunch of jobs. Well, they moved some, but they basically took that money and reinvested back in their own company. The other two, fuck those guys. I don't know what they did.
Yeah. It's almost like Roger and Me is the prequel
to this
movie.
Was GM one of the other ones?
GM, Chrysler.
I think I don't know I don't know that much information about it, but I'm pretty sure they got bought by like a German company or something. And the
Jeep, like one of their divisions. No, the whole thing was bullshit. I mean, they basically gave their CEO more money with the bailout. You know, and like
that's ridiculous.
I like this documentary, but like I did have some problems with like the like glossy picture. You know, like
you need a film festival that is Who Killed the Electric Car,
right?
Roger and Me, Detropia, and The Nice Guys.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because The Nice Guys is kind of
what
like
would George what in. Would you call that film festival? That's my question of the day. It's what would you call
something? Boy, just like George's understanding of Detroit and Dr. Detroit. That's the only other thing I would throw in there.
That's another so not all documentaries.
No. I mean, The Nice Guys is not a documentary.
Oh, right.
But it does tie in the car industry. All of it, Shane Black's movies.
You wouldn't call it like, I don't know, Dystopia, Detroitia.
Yeah, I mean, that's a question about this, because it's like Detropia.
Sponsored by Little Caesars.
Detropia, it's more dystopia than utopia, right?
Yeah.
We would all say. There's not much utopianism.
I didn't think about
that.
I just figured it was Utopia and Detroit together.
Because there was that one thing where you see auto parts and someone had changed it to look like Autopia or Utopia. And like I was like, that's like...
That was another thing that made me kind of think about, though, is like how, you know, the car industry is kind of like what ruined Detroit, you know, leaving and everything. And a lot of it kind of seems to be a theme where it's like, I don't want to be insensitive to these people because I don't work in these industries and I didn't lose. But sometimes you wonder why they're like, they're holding on to it so much, like the coal people. Mm-hmm. It's like if the jobs left and they're just like, well, bring it back. And you're like, what if, like, can't we just maybe get a different industry there? Or like, why are we so focused on like keeping the industry that had failed you in the first place? And
because
it's all they know, generations. It's all they know, man. Like,
but that's also a huge part of what seems to be wrong with like things in America a little bit, is like people get fucked over, but then they're not able to adjust, or and not that's easier said than done, but it,
absolutely,
it's so interesting.
It's a very complicated problem, yeah. And it's not just, it won't be fixed with just one solution.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a multi-pronged problem, but there's paternalism that happened in like the 50s and 60s and 40s, 50s and 60s with these one factory towns. And like I grew up in the Midwest, and they're everywhere in the Midwest. I grew up in near Kalamazoo that was all like paper mills.
Yeah.
And then everywhere in the west of Detroit were all manufacturing jobs for the auto companies. So my first job out of high school was working at an auto factory that made oil pans for GM parts.
Yeah.
You know, like, so like it's just this.
It's in the blood.
Yeah, it's in the blood, and there's generations after generation.
Yeah. So yeah, that's why it's hard, easy for me to say that, but when I keep seeing it, it makes me wonder, like, what?
No, it makes, I mean, that's...
be like, okay, that's maybe not going to save us anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right. And yeah, I mean, that's a natural inclination to be like, guess what, guys? The robots aren't going to give up their jobs.
Yeah.
You know, like, there will be more and more manufacturing jobs that aren't going to have humans working. And like, that's the thing about Trump. I don't want to get too political here, but Trump was being basically saying, hey, coal industry, I'm going to bring back coal industry. Hey, auto and people, I'm going to bring back. And it's like, no, you're not. Yeah, those things are done. It's a crumbling facade, you know?
That was my other question, watching a lot of the union negotiations of the United Auto Workers. It's like, because I didn't know how little a union, like, people weren't making much more than $15-$16.
No, that was sad.
They're talking about they were negotiating to drop them to like $11 an hour.
That's like a huge percentage.
So insulting.
Yeah.
And like also, but did a lot of union guys end up going with Trump because they're also want to change the trade? They don't want to have
the trade. I think in general, what I've taken away from it is that he was at least talking about it.
Right.
He's the only one that would.
She wasn't like even if his solution wasn't right, they just liked that he was mentioning it.
Right.
So even if they didn't agree with like, yeah, this has got to go or that's got to go, they just were mad that she was like,
she was not going to talk
about
it.
She wasn't even mentioned.
Or visiting.
Yeah.
Or like basically like gave up on the working class.
And by she, we obviously mean Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
My wife. I was talking about
her. I was wondering if
ever wants to talk about it. But yeah, you know, I think I don't completely agree with those people, but you're like, okay, now it's time for me to listen and see what it was that made you do this.
Well, Trump had a Rust Belt strategy. Yeah. I mean, he visited 1,000 fucking times from Pittsburgh to Iowa City up to Madison to Detroit and around. Like he knew that the Democrats took that shit for granted.
Yeah.
That they've been lifelong Democrats up there, and he knew that people were fucking pissed. Especially about,
I feel like maybe in Bannon was probably like a huge, probably told him about, I feel like he's in tune with those people.
Oh yeah. Well, and like he got people from that area to be on his campaign as well. And
exactly.
So they
just
knew.
Like we can't leave out the racial piece, which is basically like people let Detroit fall apart because it's like a heavily African American city. Yes. It was like a place where you could be black and have like a middle class life. And the unions helped that. And like, it's just the same thing. Like, a lot of the growth in Oakland having a black population was people building ships during World War II.
Right.
Yeah.
And like then they stayed, and then things were fine. Actually, you could have Oakland was like a city that had like a black middle class. It was very weird for me to like go somewhere like when I went to Atlanta and like, oh, everyone's like everything, because like where I live, it's like there's like not a lot. There's not really like a black middle class.
People aren't moving up the ladder.
So and I think like even the for the unions to go. For Trump or for anyone, like for them to appeal based on these economic policies, it's just like the racism inherent in the Trump campaign should have not taken root in Michigan. But what happened, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I think for that, it's like there's so much anger that at that point you either are racist or excuse it. You're like, I don't even care about that anymore.
Right. I just care about
so mad.
Policies.
And one guy seems mad too.
Mm-hmm.
He seems pretty mad like me. I'm mad. Let's fucking
even if he does
turn
not
the system
come
upside
from
down.
Any working class background at all.
Yeah.
You know, the ruling class background.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was talking about NAFTA and shit that these people care about and the, you know, manufacturing jobs and industry jobs. And, you know, no one else has. People kind of have been like, whatever with that shit. That's now 20 years old. But like people feel that shit.
Well, I feel like that thing about the union is kind of like going to your question of like, why do people kind of hold on to this thing of trying to bring things back? And the union kind of only exists with this sort of manual, you know, labor kind of like just not super special. I mean, it has to fight against. So it's, I guess, like the union's trying to renegotiate a contract with like American Axle. And American Axle's like, look, we're going to go to Mexico. The only way we're going to stay here is if you guys take a pay cut.
Yeah.
And they're just like out of just. It's just pride, which is fair.
And that also
like,
just...
Oh, we're not going to take a pay cut.
Pride and like
seems like
facts.
An inevitable way that the world almost has to go, where it's weird. It's like we have minimum wage and high standards, so then like obviously the people that want to make money are going to seek the less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the $15 minimum wage they're trying to get through. I mean, like that's like it. Yeah, this now that is like that should be the minimum wage.
Yeah.
And then... people are still fighting it. You know?
Things are just going to evolve, or I don't know. I think in America we want everything. We want like we don't want to have like poor people, but we also don't want our jobs to go away. Mm-hmm. We don't want the poor people to come into our country to take the job. Like we just want all the jobs here and all the money here, and none of the poor people. Like,
have you heard? We're special.
Yeah,
we're a special country.
We're so safe,
and we don't also
so
don't
want to
work hard. And like there was a point in this documentary, I don't remember where the guy was saying like we put our feet up at one point, and just started fucking chilling.
Like that was one of the voiceovers. Like, we were exceptional, and we thought we would just stay exceptional.
Yeah,
and we now it's not how it is.
And that's what I think people who fight for immigrants are. It's like that is what. It sounds like a talking point, but it is what kind of made this country so exceptional. Yeah. We constantly had a new crop of people that were like, where do I work? Give me a job. I want to try to get my life better.
For
like,
sure.
That's
people,
why you move. You
they
don't
work
move.
So much harder than me.
Yeah. Like
I was born here.
Yeah, no one's moving to another country for
I'm the
free
laziest
ride.
Fucker.
Yeah.
We're, George and I are hoping that this podcast makes us money.
We were exceptional this one episode. Yeah. And we could just kick back. Yeah.
But also, fucking immigrants are self-starters. They're the people that open bodegas and pizza places and restaurants and fucking, you know.
Yeah, like people, I think, have this weird thing where like, oh, people are coming into this country to like commit crimes or be lazy. It's like you could do that at home.
Yeah,
you don't like Mexico's not like the like it's not like super uncorrupt. Yeah. Like you just can't commit crimes here.
Yeah. I like too how they paint a picture of immigrants being lazy, but like they walked over a mountain through a fucking desert with like
to get on the welfare that you think they're on that they're not. Like
they were exceptionally not lazy in order to get here to be lazy. That doesn't make any sense.
So you growing up in Michigan, a friend of mine was telling me that there's a huge like Middle Eastern population in Michigan, like there's a lot of Iraqis
especially.
And so that didn't even get covered in here, but
no.
There was a lot of missing in this.
Oh, I mean, like, you know, they couldn't handle everything.
Yeah.
But it's a diverse place. I mean, it is a heavily African American city, but it's also like there's a lot of different groups there. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dearborn is, I think, has like second to Saudi Arabia. Yeah. The most, you know.
What is it? Like, I was always interested in what draws like races and groups to like.
Yeah.
I want to study that.
Yeah,
I'm more interested in like the food aspect, right? I want to like go.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Places and be like, oh, there's so much like in San Francisco, there's so much Burmese food, which my dad's from.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm like, yes, but like, why? Yeah. What brought the Burmese there?
Right.
Is there a huge Burmese population in the Bay Area? Is that?
I don't know, but
just that Burma Superstar took off, and then everyone
that may be it.
Burmese.
Because like I go everywhere, and I always look for Burmese restaurants. Mm-hmm. And then I think when I went to San Francisco, like well, there's like 20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've only
really
usually
good.
Like two.
Yeah. So your background is your dad. Well,
my
Burmese?
Dad was born in Burma. Mm-hmm. He's ethnically Indian. Mm-hmm. They identify as like Pakistani, so it was like a lot confusing. Mm-hmm. But like. A lot of the food my grandmother would cook growing up was Burmese.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's an Asian-ier version of Indian food.
Yeah, it's like Thai and Indian married
together.
It's so good. Together.
Yeah, yeah, that rice.
Yum.
Yeah. I love Burmese food.
But yeah, like that's,
making some on Friday.
I assume it's just like one family gets in and then they just bring their friends.
Yeah,
like,
come on.
There's this phenomenon, it's just all over California now. I think it just started in LA where a lot of the donut shops are run by Cambodians, and it just was like a family got involved in it, and then it was just easy to bring people over or like get them involved in franchising.
Isn't there like a huge Hmong population in Michigan too?
Is there?
I think so.
Okay.
Hmong?
Like, yeah, Hmong.
What is that? I don't even.
They
know
don't have a country.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I have a friend who knows a lot more about it. But
I used to know a lot of Hmongs in college.
Oh,
so
did you?
Why, like I worked with a lot of guys who were Hmong, and I can't remember all the details they used to tell me about. But yeah, they don't have a country, but I feel like a lot. They're like probably maybe around China is where they originated, and they're like called like the people in the mountains.
Okay,
So like, I always like ask him, like, is it Mongolian? And he's like, no, it's not Mongolian.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like, huh. Yeah. Oh, no. It's like H-M-O-U-N-G. Yeah. Hmong.
Michigan was always weird because people would always move for the auto industry and then the farming industry, of which there's both was heavily both inundated in Michigan.
Yeah, when I meet someone who says they're from the suburbs of Detroit, I assume like their parents worked in the car industry. Or
Everyone. Yeah. My wife's family, it's like everyone had something to do with like cars.
Yeah. Well, in LA, if they say, are you in the industry? It's the same thing in Detroit, but they mean cars.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, like, what do you do for the car industry?
I gave my headshot to someone in Detroit for a car job.
Reason it didn't work.
You said you're in the industry.
Yeah. And now, but now, like the jobs I had in high school are gone. I mean, they're all like, you know, like all that shit has.
And like
gone.
Flint, too. Like,
oh God.
Flint.
Yeah.
Like, jeez. Driving through Flint is like, sometimes I'll fly out of Flint when you go there. It's just like you drive down streets of just like everything's boarded up, liquor store, strip club, boarded up.
Yeah, it's tough.
Like that's even worse than Detroit.
Flint is bad.
Yeah, the water is poison.
You can't even drink the water.
Yeah, and we have, and then, I mean, ugh, there's so many problems. Like you have like Republicans, white Republicans, who basically are like, you know what, guys, we know better than you do. So we're gonna change a bunch of laws in order for us to take over, like the manager law, where like the governor can be like, you know what, your city doesn't know how to run itself.
Oh, right.
So the city manager law, we're like, we're gonna send in someone who's gonna act as your mayor for a while and get shit straight.
They did that in Detroit, right? Because they filed for bankruptcy in 2013.
They almost sold out the museum, right?
They're selling their art pieces and shit. Like
they were going to.
It's a great museum. I've been to that.
Oh, the DIA is amazing. Awesome. Oh yeah.
So glad they didn't sell it.
Detroit in itself is an incredible city, and I feel like, I mean, it's so weird because I feel like this documentary was trying to gloss over some things. There was like a lot of pretty things to look at, and what I call ruin porn. It was like, oh, look at this train station, and like, you know, that kind of
that
shit.
Instagram.
Someone else used that term, actually. Someone else said ruin porn.
Oh, really?
One of these reviews I found referred to it as ruin porn.
Yeah, where like people are just like, it's an upside down piano. Yeah. You know, like, ooh, that's,
love it. Yeah. Let's put a whiskey bar right there.
All the glass is broken.
Actually, that reminds me of that line that the guy who owns the Ravens Club is just like, I don't know, they set fire and then they go masturbate.
Yeah,
like,
that was hilarious.
Sick people. So then, but then he goes,
but then he didn't judge him, right?
He's like, whatever, you need to do it. Get
up. Or something like
that's so Midwestern.
That
man.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that is so nice Midwestern.
Light a building on fire, go turn it off.
But he's like,
you know what?
Freedom of choice, man. Yeah. If you want to do that.
Yeah. But it does like, it's like very pretty. It's showing these ruins. It's very pretty, but it's like, it's tragic. I mean, it does feel like it's like, yeah, like you said, like ancient Rome or just like its ruins. It's like, it's like, it's America today that people live in. It's a third world country in America. My friend who grew up there in the 80s was saying stuff about that because, like, it was even in the 80s, it was having the similar problems. It's been going on for so long. Oh,
yeah.
I was thinking, like, how, like,
the riots of 60. Yeah. I mean, even,
Yeah. Like, you'll see stuff about it. Like, I was thinking of, like, all these British shows you'll see that's all, like, striking miners during Thatcher, and it's like kind of like that en masse too. It's like like that, but it's been going on nonstop since then.
Well, and it's like they don't want the underclass to have too much power, which is why they're trying to take away unions. That's why the Republicans have been trying to take away unions for a long fucking time, because they're Democratic, usually voting blocks, and that gives people who make $11 an hour a voice, which they do not want.
Right.
Nope. They don't want underclass people to be able to be like, we're going to hold you to task.
Yeah, I heard like Trump, they're going to try to go after SAG even. They're trying to like,
no.
Is that not true?
It took me 10 years.
Yeah, I just paid the thing.
I know.
Well, we learned that. We learned that Reagan was helped the strike that got.
Did you know about
SAG
that?
No, what
residuals?
He helped SAG.
Yeah, he was a Democrat. Oh, this is like something. We did something with Wayne Fetterman, and he was talking about. He wrote an article about this because he researched it. Yeah, that Reagan helped the strike that got everyone residuals.
Wow,
there were no residuals before the strike.
Before he was president, or when he was
before he was governor.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that makes more sense a little.
Yeah.
Before he was on like the
he's still
side,
yeah,
he'd
been in SAG. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was him, Ed Asner. I don't
know. But when you talk about like there is not manufacturing is not coming back in the way that it ever was. I mean, the scenes of people ripping houses down to get the pipes,
the copper
to
pipes.
Melt down to send to China, so then we can buy shit
more,
from China,
more
we can buy those
shit.
build your dreams cars from China.
Yeah. Right.
It's like fucking crazy cycle. But they're aware of it, and the people at the top of like Ford that are coming out the vaults are not aware.
Tommy fucking Stevens knew more about what to do with the Chevy Volt than the people that were making the fucking Chevy Volt. Like,
Where is he now?
The fucking price.
Where is Tommy?
Hear more about him.
Yeah.
Just when you get introduced to him, he's like the owner of the club. He's like, I'll be making your wings. I used to have a staff.
Yeah.
Not enough people come
He's cutting lettuce
anymore.
And being like, it's a hobby.
He's trying to open that lettuce thing, and he's like, admiring how tight the Mexican guys that roll it can get. They're like, how do they get it like this?
It was like a Seinfeld moment. I love how they wrap these. Yeah.
And you're like, how do they get it?
You have to cut it open.
Observational comedy.
And you look for the tape. There's got to be tape involved. There's no tape.
It's just, they can do it.
It's just, it's incredible. Yeah, absolutely. And he's like, I mean, George McGregor was the guy from the UAW, and then Crystal Starr was the barista video blog.
I liked her.
Yeah. She's throughout. She's the blogger.
Oh, yeah.
She's in the different buildings and stuff. Mm-hmm. She's the one, another like.
Oh, the Swedish guys? Yeah. Oh,
about that.
Swedish
guys.
Yeah.
She's working at the cafe, and then these Swedish
guys. Oh, yeah. They're kind of insulting her a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, why
you seem to hang out? I was like,
she was like pretty chill with them. Yeah.
She's like, why are you guys here? And he's like, I've come to see the decay.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, fuck you. And then he goes, he's like, where we're from, it's all pretty and nice. So, and he's like, I'm here to see the decay. Yeah. And it's like, fuck you. Yeah. You're fucking decay.
And then he got so mad about the Harry Potter glass. you just told her entire city was in decay.
Yeah.
And she made a pretty, like soft
good snap.
It's a snapped on him. Yeah.
He's like, hey, I don't like Harry Potter.
Oh, man.
I don't like decay.
Yeah.
What happened in Detroit is now spreading throughout. There's no buffer between the rich and the poor. Only thing left is revolution.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
There was an interesting early on. I don't know if this is some dude that's talking to a news guy spouting out, but he said a family moves out of Detroit every 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah. That was in the very beginning.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Wasn't that the mayor or something? Or who was that guy? Was it the dude, the mayor? And he was kind of saying how like everyone, as soon as they make enough money, they leave.
Even the mayor said that was just like a political stance.
I didn't know how true that was.
I think it's pretty true. Like, I moved out of Michigan in 97, and at that time, 45% of kids from 18 to 30 had moved out of the state.
Wow.
And that's brain trust. I mean, that's like your next generation of like new business owners and people who are going to invent a fucking computer or something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know,
not vote for Trump.
Right, exactly. Move to an area that's all going to vote for a Democrat.
And there's a lot of like the college system is very good there. Like Ann Arbor is very good.
People
know about all these, you know, University of Michigan is a well-regarded thing.
Right, but they go there for their 4 years, or in my case, seven, and then get the fuck out.
Yeah,
that's sad.
Yeah, you're not holding on to like these new entrepreneurs and people who are going to be inventing stuff.
Yeah,
and at one point, they're like Michigan's great idea was to lower taxes for movie industries, you know, which they did for a while. So everything was made in Detroit, and you know, but like even
Batman
then,
or something.
Yeah, Batman and all kinds of shit was filmed there.
Do you think it's like we were saying earlier, like having kind of like a mono industry, even though there's like three major car companies, everything just is going to fall apart when that falls apart and gets
it seems like that
stuff.
Like,
yeah. So how, yeah, there's like no one, yeah, there's no, this basically was like, there's no one solution. There seems to be like, has to be a lot of different, and this is even before the bankruptcy happens. Yeah.
Right.
This and is shot 2000.
People in yeah. power that are going to actually be working towards, like, that's so many factors that have to go right.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and
they had a lot of corrupt, like
tons of corrupt.
Yeah, right. Like someone got arrested in 2008. The mayor, the previous
Kwame
mayor,
Kilpatrick.
Yeah. Kwame, I've heard a lot about him.
Yeah, well, he was just partying with hookers and, yeah. and dropping fucking ecstasy. And then one hooker who was like kind of hanging out with him was murdered. Jeez. And
I bet that's happened in Russia with someone.
Yeah. yeah. And Mayor Ding, I mean, like he was, you know, he's an
MBA. Not envy him at all.
No. He, dude, when he left the office of mayor's office, he had a 14% approval rating. 14%. You can't. Dude. It's like, how do you fucking fix
that? That's lower than the media.
That's lower than child molester. I mean, like,
fake news. Detroit's great. Everything's yeah. good.
Right? Yeah. I mean, it's like, I mean, somebody wanted, I mean, people want to hear some hope about the future, which is yeah. just, it's, you can't say, guess what, guys? Everything you've depended on for the last 50 years is done. Yeah. It's gone. Like,
no one's won an election that way.
No, it's really hard to win that way.
Everything sucks and it's not going to get better. Vote for me.
Maybe that's why, like, Hillary was just like throwing peace signs on her way to another state over yeah. Michigan. It's like, I don't even want to have to say anything
yeah.
at all.
Yeah.
Because it's fucked up over yeah. there.
Yeah. Mm. The heart.
I mean, gentrification is like kind of like a different problem there. Like, I think it's like there's, you're not displacing anyone when it's a ghost town in yeah. some areas. I mean, but it's like then you have a bunch of these Shepherd Fairy
yeah,
wannabes
really
rolling in.
That was really interesting fat tidbit in there was that people will just live on a street with, like, they're the only ones that live in, like, two
blocks. Oh, hell yeah, dude. Yeah. We used to go to parties in Detroit, and the whole way of, this is obviously pre-Facebook, when all that shit, but they would be like, look for the light. That's how you would find the house, because it would be pitch black, and you would turn a corner, and you'd see a light in the distance. Oh, be like, there it is. We used to break into mansions and throw raves with generators.
Wow.
And, like, people would be skateboarding in these grand ballrooms and shit. Oh, you know, like, and then yeah. cops don't fuck with that. They don't even go out there.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
there's areas of Detroit cops in the fire department just don't go to.
Bother with.
They right. can't, really.
It seems like even in the 80s, like, so in the 80s when Japanese cars came in, that was the big thing, that they were really anti-Japanese cars and into the point of, like, super racist against Japanese people in general.
Rice burners.
Yeah. So it was like, that was, it's been going on for long enough that, and like you're saying, yeah, the people at the top didn't want to adjust what they were doing because they were making money.
No, well, it takes a visionary to, you know, and like these guys aren't thinking about 60 years in the future. They're thinking about their next home with their next pool and what they're going to get their wife for Christmas and shit. They're not thinking about, I mean, what do they say?
Trying to build something.
Right. No, not something that's long standing. Like the guy even says, hey, we talked to the auto people and what did they say? It's like, we don't care about your living, you know, right?
That's brutal, yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's how these people think. It's just like, this is business. It's not about people. It's about the bottom. It's like, fuck that.
Yeah. I mean, it does seem like at the end, if there's anything that you feel like there's, you know, they're the people in Detroit, like the people they're that we talk to, they're the ones that are like resilient and have good, and you know,
like
have good ideas.
What's the name of the one that was in the car show asking the questions? Like,
that's Tommy, right?
Yeah, Tommy Stevens.
Someone like him, if he could somehow someone get behind that guy and that guy run for mayor or something that guy run a business.
But he's a retired school teacher who taught in Detroit. Like that's enough of like
he did his time.
What's the worst job you guys have had?
Ooh,
or one of, not maybe not the worst, but like one of the shittiest jobs.
It's a boring response, but I used to be a call center person in a Bank of America call center.
Yeah.
Whew,
that was rough.
Yeah, you're the front lines of the corporate evil monster. Yes. You know? Like,
we're asking you why they're making certain decisions,
and a lot of times, you know, you see like you know people overdraft their accounts, and this was back like I think right when there was like a lawsuit about to happen against Bank of America because
the way they would
let the charges go through would be so that there would be the maximum amount of overdraft fees.
Oh, yeah,
and then you'd look, someone would call in. You know, they overdraft their account. You know, it is a little bit their fault. But then all of a sudden they owe like $135 because they overdrew their account $100.
Right.
And you're like, come on.
Yeah.
Just charge them $35.
Right.
And
be cool.
Tell them not to do it again.
Yeah.
You know, like, but the way they would do it And they would have us have these talking points, so you felt like you were this monster. They'd be like, why did you charge me an overdraft fee for this gum and this, like, this bread or right. this thing? And but, like, you took out this big charge first, even though this big charge was made at the end of the day.
Right.
And then you're supposed to be like, well, the big charges we consider are more important, like things like your mortgage or your car payment. So we don't want those to get rejected. So we run those first. And we run everything smaller and smaller. But really, it's just so that you can get over that finish line and
right.
then like ding, 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 yeah. ding, ding, for overdraft fees. Then the next day you don't pay it, there's late fee and then late fee and late fee. And you're like, wow.
Clever.
And, you know, I a lot of times I was trying to give money back, but they're watching you. They're looking. They're making sure that you're not. You know, you try to, like, work with people. It's like, look, I'll give you half of this off.
Right.
And then they start, your supervisors are like, hey, why are you giving so much money back? Or yeah. what's going on?
Man, I'm
going
to need to see you in my office.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it was really, it was gross because eventually you're being yelled at so much that you almost do, part of you has to take the side.
Right.
Of the bank, because you're just trying to, like.
Get defensive.
Be like, lose logic. Like, yeah. someone's like, why did you do this? You're like, well, you overdrew your account. No, I didn't. And you're like, you did overdraft your account.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times I'd end up just like, you'd get in these fights and then end the conversation with like, I'm trying to help you. Like,
yeah.
You know, and without, the they're listening, the bank's listening, so you can't say it. But basically you're saying like, these people want your money.
Yeah.
Don't like rest on them.
Yeah.
Don't just put your money in this bank
right.
and think they're not going to be like sneaking some money in.
So they listen in on the phone conversation?
Yeah. Which was also, that it felt like you're just in the Matrix. Like,
right.
You know, they're not listening all the time, but they can go like, oh, let's look at this call from 2 days ago. And then you sit in an office, you look at them, they're playing your audio, you hate your voice. Then
you hate your voice.
You know, it's like, it's and then they can track every single movement you do. Like if you go to the bathroom the next day, they'll be like, wait, where were you for 5 minutes yesterday? And you're like,
oh,
to the bathroom. Or like, and because everything is tracked this computer,
right?
And every day you'd come in and there'd be like 2 pages of like stats on what you did yesterday. Like,
whoa,
this is how long your calls were on average, this is how many transfers you did, this is how many breaks you took, this is like how many people rated you. And so like it was like, I never had a job where someone was just had every one of your, like your heartbeat.
How do you thrive in that situation? Like,
and you know what sucked was I was actually really, my stats were really good and they didn't like that either because you were an outlier.
You were an outlier, yeah.
So they were constantly trying to figure out what I was doing and if I was doing something wrong. Because I was getting like good reviews by the, because, you know, they'd give you, they'd give you bonuses. So they give you incentive to get a good rating.
Right.
So I would try to get people to take my survey. You're not allowed to ask them to take your survey, mm-hmm. but you can recommend. You're like, if you'd like to take my survey,
yeah,
you know?
Right.
And you're so a lot of people would take my survey and they would, and then my manager was like, why do you have more surveys than everyone? Or why are they all good or something? You're being, you're being too nice to them or something. And then she'd listen to my calls with me and she'd try to figure out like, what was wrong? And she's like, you're just being too nice. And you're like, you told me to be good. Because then they get talked about it. They're like, their boss is like, okay, here's your chart. You have a couple outliers. This guy's doing too good. This guy's doing not good enough. Whoa. We got to get everyone in the middle.
God.
Whoa.
It's like the Wire.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Call center version.
Like, oh, my God.
That's so crazy that they don't want you to exceed. Because I did.
Because then they're paying you your bonus. And they're like, why are we paying this guy a bonus every...
I did a call center where you would get like a bonus. It was like trying to sign people up for like the National Resource Defense Council or something like that. And I was pretty bad at it. But like one time I almost convinced like someone under 18 to use their dad's credit card. And they were like, and I could tell for them, they were just like, we almost just want that money, but we don't want it to come back to bite us in the ass. So like, all right, you gotta cut her loose. Yeah. like, but she's like, she said she likes pandas. You know? Oh, I hated that job so much. They weren't quite like that, but like they, I would be on the phone with someone and then I would suddenly see a manager pop in and go like, thumbs up. I'm like, what the fuck? Were you listening to me just now?
It was,
like, they were.
It
That's
was also
were
like
doing.
A cult, like, cause in the beginning in the training thing, they're like really just trying to get you to love the company.
Oh God!
And they're like, "How much we love the customer, and we're a good bank, and they really just trying to get you to like drink the Kool-Aid.
Right.
And then after that, like, honeymoon period, they're like, fuck the customer. What are you doing? Why are you trying to give them my money back? We don't care about them. You're like, what happened? I thought, what about that kumbaya
thing? No, they're like, this is love. No, this is love. No, this is love. Yeah. It's like, I don't know what to do anymore.
What's your worst job?
All of them. I've had nothing but shitty jobs my entire life. That's why I do what I do now, which is nothing.
Yeah. I would say dishwashing sucked, too, because, like, it's just gross. It's
comedy club dishwashing, just like a bunch of ranch dressing. Like,
and you know what was the worst feeling? Was when you just be piled up with dishes, and then like your manager or some guy in a suit, certain tie comes in and just like gives you shit that you're not going fast enough, and you want to be like, "You want to do this, buddy?
Yeah.
You want to fucking wash these gross ass dishes all day
manager
long?"
Manager Kevin,
I did some dishwashing in my college like cafeteria, and that was the worst. Like I just I'd have to scrape out this giant soup container. It's like this giant soup thing, and like take the garbage out and compact it. And I'm just like, what am I doing with my life?
Yeah.
Inevitably, whenever you're like mad, like you take like the spray thing, you'd be spraying stuff, and you'd hit a ladle.
Yeah.
And it would just come
back
into
your
face.
Like the anger would just come back at you. Like, there's always a ladle.
It's always
a ladle. That's a good, that should have been like a, that's like a Zen story. Yeah. Like, no, there's always a ladle.
There's always a ladle. Yeah. That I mean, I've worked so many. I had a third shift job at a factory making car parts. The one I talked about for GM that was horrid. It was 3,000 degrees in there. Because it's all press stuff. And it's every 15 seconds I would get another oil pan that came down the pipe. And my job was to take these super sharp knives and cut away what's called flash, which is the extra molding.
The extra molding.
Yeah, and it's about 1,500 degrees.
Jesus, you were doing that?
Yeah.
In high school? What?
In high school. Jesus. And you would cut
it with... cutting it off with?
A knife. These super sharp
knives. Oil pans?
Wow. Yeah, the extra flash plastic. And it's like liquid. And so if you get it, if it touches your skin, it's just immediate burn. So people... you would have to wear layers, but it's Michigan in
so
the
hot.
Summer in this factory. And then on my lunch break, I would go read, and I'd have people knock on my window. I'd roll down my window. They'd be like, what do you do, read? And I'd be like, yeah.
Bill
trying to get out of here.
And they're like, yeah, what do you think? You're better than the rest of us? College boy.
Yeah.
No, seriously. And then they would get mad at me because I wouldn't drink with them because these people were throwing back 12 packs.
You were underage.
I was, underage. And they thought I was a cop. Because of it.
Oh my god.
So for
and you're probably breaking
chaps can't
laws
drink,
too, right?
Yeah. I was like 17, but like because I drove my parents' car, which was a nice car, they thought I was a cop. And so for the entire summer I'd get the stink eye from everybody. They're like, look at that cop over there. Like, yeah, cops are usually 17 and working third shifts at
and
a
plastic. Don't drink.
And don't drink. Yeah. It was
You know that one thing about cops, they hate to unwind.
Yeah, they do.
So you're the only one among us that's kind of had a foot in the auto industry.
Yeah, well, I also had a job where I was on the front lines of Ford, where my job was to transcribe. Every morning I'd have to come in and transcribe the complaint line for Ford. So I would put in a cassette tape, hit play, and I'd have to transcribe what people were saying for their 1-800 complaint line. And it was all like, God fucking damn it!
Because Chris Farley was calling every day.
Yeah, yeah. I live in a Ford down by the river. Oh, it was, I mean, and so for 8 hours, it was just people yelling and complaining. On and in my ears, and I'd have to transcribe it.
Yeah, when you're on the phone, I think there's an extra element that people don't—they don't have to look at your face when they yell at you, so they just let loose.
They let loose. Oh, I've done it before and it's not pretty.
There'd be so many people that like after that loose, like, and it's not your fault.
Yeah. No, by the end, you're like commiserating with them. It's like being a hostage. Yeah. You're just like, because some, especially technology, really pisses me off.
Oh,
when
I
buy something that's expensive, like my PS4 that broke after I bought it, I was so mad. Yeah. I called them and I yelled.
You get a phone tree at first and figure out which number kind of vaguely fits your situation.
None of them.
Yeah.
And it's always none.
You're calling because you love PlayStation.
Yeah. Because you want to buy another PlayStation. Yeah. Push 5 to order yet another one. Yeah. No, I hate that shit.
Yeah.
Man.
That was the worst part about Bank of America was they would start complaining about that. That was like how every call started, and you're just like, I hate it too. I don't know how to, I hate it. I didn't make it.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm here. I'm a human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we start here?
What really rankles you, though, is when that person that you call immediately kind of gets defensive, and you're like, listen, you're not entitled to be. Oh, like, yeah, I'm the one who's mad.
Just listen for the numbers.
Yeah.
You can. I'm angry.
Yeah. Just stop it. So when was your last day job? What year? How long have you been doing
I guess my last day job was probably driving for Uber, which I liked a little bit, and then after a while I started hating it, and that was maybe a little over a year ago was when I did that, and I would do that on and off between when I needed money or not.
Right, and now you're super rich because you have a show on Adult Swim. Right?
Yeah. I'm a small character on it, but they're coming out with the second season. It's called Dream Corp LLC.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's really fun. I really like it. It's a really weird and creative show. It's like mostly live action, and then there's some like cartoon elements, which are really psychedelic, like, and weird
combined.
Yeah, it's like basically the premise is it takes place in this like dream laboratory where they do like dream therapy. So like the main character of the show comes in with a erectile dysfunction, so they go in your dreams and they're trying to figure out like what is it that's causing you, like it's an issue you had with your mother when you were young, or like,
oh wow.
And so yeah, but they go in there and it's like really kind of dangerous, like you could die in the dream or you can get trapped in the dream.
That's a cool idea.
And yeah, everything's outdated. Yeah, so it's like really dark.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I'm cool. Like a nurse that puts people under and also is doing drugs the whole time.
You're live action or you're anime?
I'm live action. Okay. Yeah.
Who's the star?
John Grise and Nick Rutherford. John Grise plays the scientist. He's Uncle Rico, or he's Laszlo from Real Genius, or bunch of other stuff, but he's so good in it. And then Nick Rutherford is a
comic.
He's like a comic that he comes in his first day of work and the doctor prescribes him to work there, and so like he's kind of just like a pushover, and he's like, oh okay, and now he's kind of trapped in this weird like unethical place.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's really fun.
That's great. That sounds like a fun show. And I finally remember Laszlo.
Yeah,
what a great character.
No, it was kind of cool, like on the set was like all the crew were asking him about Laszlo.
Yeah.
And then like all the younger people were like, what's Napoleon Dynamite?
Yeah. They were like, like, no.
It's such like a different generation. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. So basically, to get back quickly to Detropia here, it's like I wrote down ruined porn, cities are about people, not buildings, feral houses, get over yourself.
Get over yourself. Who's that directed to?
It was directed to the
direct, art people.
The art people.
Yeah, the hygienic dress league.
The mood and impressions over info and analysis was my final takeaway of.
Yeah, I'd say it's not a must see. It was interesting. I would watch it just to meet those guys, those two guys.
Yeah, I think it's a good documentary. I think people should watch it because I think it's important to remind people that, especially where I live in San Francisco, and like there are people that are fucking suffering.
Yes,
that don't need to be suffering in this country. I think it's important. However, it was a little glossy, and I think they, you know, we.
It's an appetizer.
It's an appetizer to a bigger discussion.
You gotta watch it with Roger and me.
Yeah,
kill the electric car. Nice guys. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Just to give yourself a palate. Detroit Rock City.
Yeah.
And 8 Mile.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. That finishes it.
Yeah, watch it. Well, thank you so much,
thanks,
man. Guys.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening.
You can find more episodes of SupDoc, show notes, updates, and more at supdocpodcast.com.
We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at supdocpodcast.
If you have comments, corrections, or want to suggest a documentary, email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.
The show is listener supported. You can donate to the show at patreon.com/supdocpodcast.
If you can't donate financially, please subscribe, comment, or tell a friend about SupDoc.
We'd like to thank Documentary News for their ongoing support.
SupDoc is produced by Will Scovel.
Our theme music is by David Siegel.